Happy Anniversary, Viking Lander, presented by Science at NASA. On July 20, 1976, NASA's Viking 1 lander parachuted safely to the surface of Mars, revealing an alien world that continues to puzzle scientists and tempt explorers. July 20, 2001. 25 years ago, NASA's Viking 1 lander made history by parachuting from orbit to the surface of Mars. It was the first probe from Earth to land intact on the Red Planet, and the first American spacecraft to land on any world since the Apollo program. Before Viking 1 touched down, many people thought Mars might harbor abundant plant life and microbes living among the rust-colored rocks. Scientists guessed the skies might be tinged deep purple like Earth's stratosphere, which is about as tenuous as the Martian atmosphere. But Viking 1 and its sister ship Viking 2, which arrived on Mars a few months later, quickly dispelled those notions. The landers revealed an alien world with sterile soil and eerie salmon-pink skies. No plants swayed in the breeze, no animals scurried from rock to rock. On the bright side, there were no hostile aliens either. If there was to be a war of the worlds like the one popularized by Orson Welles' famous 1938 radio broadcast, it wouldn't likely begin on Mars. The Viking 1 lander set down on Crissae Planitia, a floodplain at 23 degrees north latitude. Crissae Planitia is an interesting place, says Jim Garvin, Mars program scientist at NASA headquarters. Long ago, perhaps billions of years, it was the dumping ground for 5 wide outflow channels, apparently carved by flowing water. Scientists were attracted to it because of its watery history. Viking mission planners liked it because it was flat and seemed to offer a safe landing spot. Before Viking, Mars had been examined from orbit by the Mariner spacecraft, but the images were on the scale of a football field, explains former Viking project manager James Martin of NASA's Langley Research Center. That was the smallest thing we could see, and that's not very distinct when you consider the landers are only 6 or 8 feet across. We didn't have the slightest idea what was on the surface at such small scales. Landing anywhere was risky. Nevertheless, Viking 1 touched down safely and transmitted its first image 25 seconds later. The lander seismometer failed to uncage, and a sampler arm locking pin was stuck and took 5 days to shake out. Otherwise, all the experiments functioned as planned. The lander went about its business for more than 6 years, from July 20, 1976 until November 1982, substantially exceeding its design lifetime of 90 days. On September 3, 1976, Viking 2 set down at Utopia Planitia, a gently sloping plain half a world away from the Viking 1 site, 6,725 kilometers to be exact. Viking 2 landed at 48 degrees north latitude, near the Mi crater, says Garvin. It was a very different environment from the floodplains of Crissae. The weather at Utopia Planitia was different, a result of its more northern latitude. There were curious pedestals that scientists thought might be small volcanoes, and the terrain was littered with the ejecta of the nearby impact crater. It was a bold move, says Garvin. Indeed, Viking 2 settled with one leg on a rock tilted at 8 degrees. Nevertheless, the lander performed well for nearly 4 Earth years. Mission controller shut it down on April 11, 1980, after its batteries finally failed. Like its sister ship, Viking 2 was powered by long-lasting radioisotope thermoelectric generators, or RTGs for short. RTGs create electricity from heat given off by the natural decay of plutonium. Such a power source allowed long-term science investigations that otherwise would not have been possible. RTGs also powered the distant Pioneer 10 spacecraft, which is still alive after almost 30 years in space. Working steadily for years, the two Viking landers accumulated 4,500 up-close images of the Martian surface. They also collected more than 3 million weather-related measurements, including the first in-situ observations of a global Martian dust storm. Meanwhile, two Viking mission orbiters circling high above the planet snapped 52,000 images, covering 97% of the Martian globe. The Viking landers were successful in so many ways, but they may be best remembered as the first space probes to conduct on-the-spot biological tests for life on another planet. The experiments discovered puzzling chemical activity and scooped up samples of Martian soil, but there was no clear evidence of living microorganisms. Perhaps that's not surprising, Garvin explains. Mars has a thin atmosphere and no global magnetic field, so its surface is constantly bombarded by cosmic rays, solar flares, and harsh ultraviolet rays from the sun. UV radiation produces oxygen ions at the Martian surface that destroy organic molecules. The sampling arm on the Viking landers dug down only about 22 centimeters, says Garvin. That might not have been deep enough to reach the safe zone for tiny Martian life. Both of the Viking lander sites were extremely dry desert environments. Other sites on Mars, such as nearer the polar caps or other places where liquid water may be found, are perhaps more likely places to look for signs of present or past life, speculates Garvin. Our long-term plans call for missions to find liquid water on or under the surface, which will be the best places to begin looking for signs of life. Since the Viking program, NASA's missions to Mars have included the ill-fated Mars Observer, the successful Mars Pathfinder lander and Sojourner rover, the prolific Mars Global Surveyor, still operating in orbit around Mars, and the Mars Climate Orbiter and Mars Polar Lander, both of which failed as they neared the red planet. The 2001 Mars Odyssey spacecraft is now more than halfway to Mars and is due to arrive there on October 23, 2001. Operating from orbit, the Odyssey spacecraft will not only search for signs of underground water and interesting surface minerals, but also it will test the radiation environment to learn if Mars is safe for humans. The next pair of landers to visit Mars are scheduled to leave Earth in mid-2003 and to arrive on Mars early the following year. Unlike the Viking landers, however, the 2003 Mars exploration rovers won't be confined to their landing sites. The mobile geology laboratories, each the size of a desk and capable of traveling up to 110 meters a day, will roam the Martian terrain, analyzing rocks and soil. Like most Mars missions, the rovers will begin their interplanetary journey when Earth and Mars are close together. Every 26 months, the distance between Earth and Mars shrinks as their orbits bring them close together. Astronomers call the time around closest approach opposition. NASA plans to take advantage of as many oppositions as possible to send probes to the red planet roughly every 2 years. Future missions on the drawing board include longer-lasting and more capable rovers, reconnaissance orbiters, maybe even Mars-exploring airplanes and balloons. Perhaps one day we humans will go ourselves. And when we arrive, we'll find a pair of dusty pioneers already there, the long-lasting, prolific, but now silent Viking landers. They blazed the trail for all who followed. End notes. NASA's Langley Research Center was responsible for managing Project Viking until it turned the program over to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in April 1978. Today, JPL manages the NASA Mars Exploration Program, a two-decade-long effort to answer fundamental questions about Mars's early evolution and the planet's ability to support life. The Viking landers were designed and built at JPL. This story was written and read by Tony Phillips. It's presented by Science at NASA and the NASA Marshall Space Flight Center. To find more Science at NASA stories on the Internet, please visit science.nasa.gov.